Foo City Hospital is overwhelmed by the surge in COVID-19 cases. We'll get the latest situation from our correspondent on the ground. The city of Bacoor in Cavite confirms the local transmission of the highly contagious Delta variant. A top palace official hints at the possibility of a longer lockdown in Metro Manila. And later on in the program, we'll speak with International Studies Professor Renato De Castro for his thoughts on the restoration of the Visiting Forces Agreement between Manila and Washington. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with a COVID-19 surge in Cebu City, which has crippled its healthcare system. Our correspondent Annie Perez now joins us with the latest. Annie, what more can you tell us?
Patients outside this big hospital in Cebu City were already lining up by the sidewalk, and some of them are inside their cars with oxygen tanks attached to them. According to Cebu City Councilor Dave Tumula, who responded last night, these are patients who are waiting to be admitted inside the hospital, who are waiting for vacancies and also awaiting their swab test results. Not all of them are confirmed positive COVID patients, but they are complaining that they are having a difficulty in breathing. Today, Carmina, we visited the area and we saw that tents have been put up by the city government along the street near the hospitals. Actually, that area last night where we saw the situation of the patients, a lot of hospitals are around that area. Today, we saw tents and personnel from the city government manning and guarding, making sure that there would be any distractions so that health personnel can properly attend to these patients while there are still no rooms inside the hospital. We checked the DOH tracker this morning, and Cebu province in general, its healthcare facilities are up to 60% now, which means 8 of it are already reaching its critical capacity, meaning more patients are coming in because of COVID-19. And around also the area of the hospitals, we saw that oxygen tanks are being sold, and some of the family members of these COVID-positive patients are rushing to buy oxygen tanks. We asked them that they need the oxygen tanks, especially for those patients who do not have a room yet in the hospital. The city government, who also visited the area, said that they are making sure that there is no hoarding and no increase of prices for the oxygen tanks, as it is an essential now in this pandemic. And on day 2 of the modified enhanced community quarantine here in Cebu City, along with Mandawi City and Lapu-Lapu City, there aren't much changes except for a few vehicles now flying the streets, but some businesses opted to remain open, but only with 50% capacity. And we're still hearing now from the Cebu City government as they are continuing making updates on how they're going to implement this MECQ and how they can help decongest the hospitals now, which is the major concern in this situation with the virus. Carmina.
Yes, Annie, a couple of questions for you before we let you go. The oxygen cylinder supply, you touched on that in your report. Is there enough supply there in Cebu?
We asked the owners of the pharmacies who were selling the oxygen tanks earlier, Carmina. They assured that there are enough oxygen tanks for the patients. And in case if they run out of supply, we are hearing also help from other government officials. Like in Naga City and San Fernando in southern Cebu, they also said that there's a plant there that can help supply oxygen and refill tanks in case there's a shortage in the city. So we're seeing now how the different agencies and the stakeholders are trying to hold hands and help one another with whatever they, especially in this situation. It feels like it is the round 2 of what Cebu and Cebu City encountered last year when we had a double ECQ, and the health sector is looking into this new quarantine classification as a breather for them so that they can take time and decongest the hospitals, as what is very evident now here in the streets and the cities of Cebu. Carmina.
And you were correct in saying that this is not the first time that the province and the city is experiencing a surge. What can you tell us about the difference between last year's surge and this time around, Annie?
Actually, city officials are saying it's harder to control the situation right now because with modified enhanced community quarantine coming from MGCQ, there's loose restrictions and people are enjoying the liberty and their freedom to move around. And actually, with the implementation of MACQ, there is no border control between the tri-cities and Cebu province, which means, unlike before, during ECQ, only residents specific to their area and locales, they're only allowed to move there. But this time, we are allowed to move from one city and from one town to another. So movement is very loose here, and that's what's making it very difficult for them to control the people who are moving in and out of the different places. And that's why they're also looking into one. These is one of the reasons why there's a surge apart from the Delta variant that was announced last week by the Department of Health. In fact, Central Visayas was the most number of cases the last time DOH announced the breakdown for the regions who had the Delta variant. So they're trying now not to control people as they have a lot of economic activities going on, but they're trying to train the business establishments and the public transport to make sure that all protocols are in place to lessen the transmission. Karina.
You touched on the oxygen supply a while ago. I want to focus now on the COVID-19 treatment drugs currently in stock in hospitals. How is that coming along? Are you still good with supply when you talk to hospitals? Annie?
The pharmaceutical companies here that we talked earlier said there is still enough supply, but the city government is already calling for donations and for help to these specific drugs. They mention remdesivir and ivermectin. If those companies or individuals who have extra of these to maybe store and back up in case there will be really a shortage now in the city. But as we checked earlier, it's still in place. We saw a lot of people lining up and they were still given the drugs that were prescribed to them. But just as a precaution and just to prepare, they're already asking now as form of donation these specific drugs to help treat COVID-19 patients here in Cebu.
And lastly, Annie, talk to us about manpower. Our healthcare professionals, go ahead.
Well, a lot of nurses here and medical personnel already resigned, especially in the private hospitals, Carmina. But the Department of Health have augmented and has immediately hired to aid in those hospitals where these nurses have resigned. Last week, we got a number. It's about 66 nurses that the Department of Health has hired and it has been deployed to the different COVID-19 hospitals. Today, we are yet to get another number. And even the city government also said that they have been posting immediate hiring with a salary above average for nurses for just a short period of time just to help in this COVID-19 pandemic. So in a nutshell, we can say that they are trying to cope up with the loss that they had over the series of resignations in the different hospitals. And we're trying to get a word from DOH if they're also wanting to ask help from other regions for medical personnel. But as of the moment, and as we speak yet, there is still no advice, but they're floating the idea, just like how Region 7 augmented other regions when they were in need of help during the response to this pandemic. Selena.
Thanks a lot. Our correspondent there, Annie Perez, joining us on the line from Cebu City. Annie, you take care. Keep safe. On to more news now. Some hospitals in other parts of the Philippines also grappling with rising coronavirus admissions in Cagayan de Oro City. The COVID-19 bed capacity of the Northern Mindanao Medical Center is already 95% full. A hospital official says there are more people waiting for confinement. He hopes the national government will ramp up vaccinations in their region.
Yun lang yung appeal namin na hopefully, and we have been discussing also with the national government na tulungan kami dito in terms of to get more vaccines so we can vaccinate more people. Kasi yun lang alam namin na can actually help us with this surge sa Delta variant.
COVID-19 cases at the Philippines' largest COVID-19 referral center climbing consistently over the past week. Philippine General Hospital spokesperson Dr. Jonas Del Rosario has seen an increase in COVID-19 admissions over the last 10 days. These include some health workers who contracted mild to moderate COVID-19. But Del Rosario notes the PGH still has enough beds, oxygen supply, and other medical equipment. The PGH has so far recorded 21 Delta variant cases, including 8 who were admitted and 2 who died.
Patuloy po kami nagpapadala ng sample sa Philippine Genome Center. Hindi na namin iniintay kung ano yung sasabihin ng Philippine Genome. Ngayon po, yung mga bago pong mga admissions ng PGH, ina-assume muna po namin na sila ay Delta variant. To protect our healthcare workers, pati po para hindi rin mahawa yung mahawa ng magkasakit yung aming health workers at baka makahawa sila, tinaasan po namin yung level ng personal protective equipment po. And then we're really making sure po na yung aming mga healthcare workers as much as possible po ay mga bakunado po sila.
More areas now under lockdown in Bacoor, Cavite after the local government there detected another Delta variant case. Our correspondent Michael Deliso now joins us for details. Mike, go ahead.
Yes, Carmina, the Bacoor City Health Office has quote, scientifically confirmed localized transmission of Delta variant after some close contacts of Delta carriers tested positive for COVID-19. Another case of Delta was detected in a socialized housing project, Ciudad de Strike, in Barangay Molino 1. The building 20, where the carrier resides, has been put under three-day lockdown, as well as the building 19, where the index patient has relatives. The Delta carrier and the close contacts have been transferred to the community isolation unit for testing and 14-day quarantine. There will be also mass testing for other residents, and the buildings will undergo disinfection. Meanwhile, lockdown is also ongoing in some areas of Adas Tusi Village in Barangay Molino 2 and BFL Grande Subdivision in Barangay Molino 6, where there are two separate cases of Delta. Lockdown at three streets in the subdivisions will last until August 9, while enhanced community quarantine will be enforced in the entire Adas Tusi village until August 15. According to the City Health Office, there was an average of 31 daily new COVID cases in Bacoor last July, with one death per day. As of Sunday, there are now 11,272 COVID cases in Bacoor, 765 are still active, 10,133 have recovered, 374 died, and there are three Delta variants. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Mike Deliso there joining us on the line. Michael, you take care and keep safe. An independent research group believes the highly contagious Delta COVID-19 variant has already spread within the community in Metro Manila. The Octa Research Group says majority of the new COVID-19 cases have been traced to the cities of Malabon, Navotas, and Valenzuela. The group also notes the rising number of hospital admissions in Metro Manila, especially in Las Piñas, where the utilization rates at intensive care units are now at critical levels. But Dr. Edsel Salvana, a member of the Philippine Health Department's Technical Advisory Group, insists the healthcare industry is not yet at a critical junction.
Somebody says, we are officially in a surge. What's so official about that? First of all, hindi naman sila government. Pangalawa, surge, walang epidemiologic definitive definition ng surge. You have to look at healthcare capacity. Go ahead and do your analysis, but please make sure that you're doing the correct analysis, because if you don't, then it just confuses people and government may make the wrong decision because nagpanik na yung ibang tao.
The Octa Research Group defends its use of the surge term.
He pointed out that the DOH is undertaking all the studies to confirm this reality. But I think most people who are looking at the spread and who are looking at the data will pretty much infer that community transmission is there, even though there has been no formal confirmation. We asked the government for an earlier lockdown early in March. It did not happen. And we had the tragedies of two-week-long waiting lists at our hospitals. The Philippine General Hospital, in a recent discussion about the Delta variant, has basically said, we assume every case is Delta. And I think that is an incredibly smart assumption to take at this point.
And that was a member of the Okta Research Group there defending the use of the term surge. Moving on, the enhanced community quarantine in Metro Manila can still be extended beyond August 20. That's according to Cabinet Secretary Carlo Nograles. He says this will depend on whether the COVID-19 situation improves after the two-week lockdown.
At one point, we'll have to talk to Congress about perhaps a Bayanihan 3, no? And what the Bayanihan 3 should contain. Because we don't also know how long this ECQ will last. We've kept the mild and asymptomatic to 90%+. And we want to keep it that way, kahit with the Delta variant. Para kahit na 18,000 per day yung cases natin, hindi pa rin ma-overwhelm yung ating mga hospital beds and ICUs.
The Philippine Health Department says it already assumes there is community transmission of the Delta variant in the country, but Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere asserts they need more concrete evidence to officially declare this. She asks independent research groups like Okta to practice the same precaution.
When they said that there was already a surge, that was really alarming. Hopefully that we can be able to align communications and that we can be able to deliver it in such a way that when we communicate, we do not alarm the public and that we just give it as information and give them the necessary steps on how they can be able to manage.
On Sunday, the number of new COVID-19 cases in the Philippines hit a three-month high. The health department recorded 8,735 new infections, bringing the nationwide total to 1,597,000. The number of active cases stands at 63,646, the highest since May 7th. The country's COVID-19 death toll also surpassed the 28,000 mark after 127 new fatalities were recorded. This is the fourth day in a row deaths exceeded the 100 mark. The Delta COVID-19 variant also ripping through Australia. And as this report tells us, COVID-19 cases are still rising in New South Wales and Queensland. That's despite weeks of strict lockdown.
Australia's COVID-19 battle in the states of New South Wales and Queensland worsened on Sunday. That's despite millions being kept under strict lockdown for 5 weeks in its largest city, Sydney. The country on Sunday reported 239 new cases of the highly infectious Delta variant, matching the record set on Thursday. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian urged residents once again to get vaccinated.
Today is the 1st of August, and I'm calling upon the people of Greater Sydney, of Greater New South Wales, to come forward and get vaccinated. To get to the 70% target, we need 9.2 million jabs. To get to the 80% target, we need 10 million jabs. And we've been talking about this in New South Wales for some time.
Australia's vaccination drive has been sluggish, with only 18% of adults fully vaccinated so far. That's owing to a vaccine supply shortage and changing medical advice. The current outbreak, which began in June, has seen cases climb to more than 3,400. Sydney's 5 million residents are now expected to remain under lockdown until at least August 28.
Over in France, protests against a mandatory COVID-19 health pass continue for the third straight week. Let's get details in this report.
Thousands of people protested in Paris and other French cities on Saturday against a mandatory coronavirus health pass for entry to a wide array of public venues. The pass was introduced by the government as it battles a fourth wave of infections. It was the third weekend in a row that people opposed President Emmanuel Macron's new COVID-19 measures have taken to the streets.
I won't go to restaurants. I don't give a damn. I won't sell my soul to go to the cinema or for other nonsense. That's it. There is more at stake. Freedom. There is nothing above freedom.
Visitors going to museums, cinemas, or swimming pools are already denied entry if they can't produce the health pass showing they've been vaccinated against COVID-19 or have had a recent negative test. Parliament approved a new law this week that will make vaccinations mandatory for health workers and extend the health pass requirement to bars, restaurants, trade shows, trains, and hospitals.
I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, we'll speak with international studies professor Renato De Castro of De La Salle University on what the restoration of the visiting forces agreement between Manila and Washington means for the Philippines. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Cebu City hospitals overwhelmed by the surge in COVID-19 cases. The city of Bacoor in Cavite confirms the local transmission of the highly contagious Delta variant. The top palace official hints at the possibility of a longer lockdown in Metro Manila. Back with more news. Local government units in the National Capital Region plan to require quarantine passes again under the enhanced community quarantine. The Interior and Local Government Department says the Metro Manila Council will announce rules on quarantine passes as well as curfew hours and a liquor ban later in the day. For now, the DILG says the checkpoints being deployed to various parts of Metro Manila are only for law enforcement and ensuring proper physical distancing.
Wala pa po tayong quarantine control points sa loob ng Metro Manila. Ang meron po tayong quarantine control points ay yung mga nasa border ng Bulacan and Pampanga, Cavite and Batangas, Rizal and Nueva Ecija. Yun pong mga nasa NCR plus provinces sa mga katabi nilang mga probinsya. Dito po sa Metro Manila, magkakaroon lang tayo ng mga quarantine control points pag nag-ECQ na po tayo. So para po doon sa mga gustong pumasok ng NCR plus area, ay kailangan po magpakita lamang sila na sila ay afford.
Last week, President Duterte restored the visiting forces agreement with the U.S. following months of speculation on whether the chief executive would push through with his threat to terminate the deal. The restoration of the VFA coincided with the visit of U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who called the agreement key, not just for the defense of the Philippines, but also in countering China's aggressive behavior in the region. For more on this, we're now joined by Professor Renato De Castro of the International Studies Department of De La Salle University. Professor, nice to see you again. Welcome
nice
to the
to
program.
Nice to see you. Good afternoon.
All right. So it's back, the VFA. It has been reinstated. No word yet on what made the president change his mind. But tell us, what does this signal to the rest of the world?
Well, it signals, number one, of course, that President Duterte, I'm looking at it from the domestic angle. He wants foreign policy to be on autopilot. He's now basically wants to focus on domestic. I think it's the issue. And the primary issue here is election. He doesn't want to be bothered anymore by big issues like relationship with the Philippines, relationship with China. So by restoring the VFA, at least he have solved one key problem on Philippine foreign policy, that, you know, keeping the alliance hanging by having the VFA supposed to be terminated.
Yeah, but one could argue, Professor De Castro, that he could have done so earlier in his term because there were other problems. There still are a lot of problems besetting the country, and he could have focused on that as well if he used that argument of focusing more on issues domestically and not being bothered by this issue regarding foreign policy, Professor.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's election period is coming. So it's just basically allowing, you know, edging in a way by simply suspending the termination process. Well, at this point in time, he said, you know, plus, of course, the fact that the Biden administration has given importance to the alliance. Number one, by sending, of course, Secretary Lloyd Austin, and focus on this, the statement. The United States value its relationship with the Philippines as sovereign equal. This is the first time that we heard this statement from the United States, which is something, you know, from the perspective of the Duterte administration, is something good, that at least we're being considered as equal, and mind you, the term sovereign.
Correct.
Meaning your domestic concerns are your problems. That's none of my business. Mm. So we have to look at these buzzwords in the communique that Malacanang released. And I was reading it. Of course, another angle there is the pandemic. Secretary Austin, even in his speech in Singapore, talked about the importance of surmounting this pandemic before he discussed the more important security issues like integrated deterrence and what he called, you know, the American strategy in the region vis-a-vis China, the free and open Indo-Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
He put it second and third, but the important point is the pandemic responses.
Yeah, but when we talk about the gains, it's not as if the Philippines is not the only one supposedly gaining from this agreement. What does the U.S. have to gain from it now that the termination of the VFA with Washington has been suspended, Professor?
To gain from this, at least they put the alliance intact. There was, of course, apprehension last year that the VFA, it's not only the VFA that will be terminated, even the Mutual Defense Treaty, and even the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement was on the chopping board.
Mm.
Duterte was playing it in a way, we simply don't know what was his motive then. But it seems that he was a bull in a china shop. But now suddenly, he basically showed, you know, just looking at the body language during his meeting with Secretary Austin. So both sides basically have earned cookie points by coming out with this deal. You know, that's diplomacy. Win-win.
Yeah. Well, I tell you something, though. The next president, at least the next president of this country, won't have to deal with that issue anymore.
Yes, it is. Oh, especially, of course, if that next president might be the daughter of the current president.
Do you think that's going to matter?
I think so. Yeah. One less problem for him and for her.
Would win. Go ahead.
Yeah, one less problem for him and for her, just in case. I'm not saying that she.
Mm.
But this is how, you know, this president is thinking.
Here's the thing, though. As we talk about the VFA, of course, we can't just talk about the suspension of its termination. This is an agreement that was supposed to be in support of the MDT. We also still have the Balikatan exercises in place. I think the latest one just happened in April. Do we really need this VFA?
Well, it's really on the side of the Americans. If the Americans will be sending their troops here, they want legal guarantees. They don't want the American troops to be put under, you know, criminal jurisdictions of the Philippines. They want to facilitate the visa process. They want to bring in equipment tax-free. So it's basically a demand on the part of the United States. If you want American forces training, developing interoperability with their Filipino counterparts, then you have to provide them legal guarantee. The agreement doesn't provide for the conduct, the number of military exercises being conducted. That is basically under the Mutual Defense Treaty.
Hmm.
So it's basically, you know, from the perspective of the United States. I remember talking to a retired U.S. Marine general who reacted, you know, when the visiting force agreement was announced to be terminated. I will never send my troops there, you know, just in case. So it's more of a legal guarantee extended to American forces. If they have to do training here in the Philippines, if they're conducting some, let's say, assistance to the armed forces of the Philippines, like what's happening in Mindanao, or if they have to conduct, let's say, they have to do some constructions, Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement constructions inside AFP military camps, they need legal protection.
Yeah. I understand that it's really, you know, a military agreement more than anything, right?
Yes, legal. It's
military, it's legal, it affords both sides a clearer process or procedure legally as well. But how does this translate? How does this affect the ordinary person?
Does well, it's a person, in terms of security. Yeah, security, especially those for example, in the Philippine National Police, the Armed Forces of the Philippines, if they have to conduct military exercises, so forth and so on. And also in Mindanao, especially in Mindanao, when they have to conduct counter-terrorism operation and you have American forces providing them assistance. Mm-hmm. That's where this really matters, this agreement.
You know, I remember Professor De Castro in the early days of this administration, and when we talked about the independent foreign policy that this administration was pursuing, you know, a lot of people were very hopeful that for once the country won't be as U.S.-centric as it has been in the past in terms of foreign policy. But how can you describe now this pursuit of an independent foreign policy in the last 5 years of this administration? It only has a few more months left in its lifetime.
Yeah. Well,
Do you think it was really a missed opportunity to really establish that independent foreign policy?
Well, the question here is, was the president really intent on coming out with an independent foreign policy or simply replacing one master with another? I think the interpretation of independent foreign policy in this administration is simply to replace the United States with China, which in a way is not really an independent foreign policy, because as your grandfather would mention then, it's just replacing one master with another. So where's the independent foreign policy there?
And finally, Professor De Castro, let me leave you with this question. How might this affect the close relationship now, the close ties of the Duterte administration with Beijing, with the suspension of the termination of the VFA?
There's never been very close. There's efforts to bring in Chinese money. You know, China promised $24 billion in October 2016. You have hardly any investments, except in two projects. That's, of course, in terms of political, diplomatic, you still have tensions. Just this year, you have two major crises that happened in that relationship. Number one, the passage of the Chinese Coast Guard law. And, of course, the crisis in Winston Shoal.
Mm.
Again, that notion of being close to Beijing is probably a figment of our imagination. Because I don't think there's been any real substance in terms of that. This administration try to effect a policy of appeasement. But I think the Chinese has always been suspicious of the Philippines, of President Duterte, whether he'll be actually able to push through with this or not. From my perspective, they viewed President Duterte and the policy of this government as more of an anomaly than a normal pattern. That probably after he's gone, everything might go back to normal.
And by normal, what do you...
Going back again
to that, how would you define normal?
Going back again to that cozy relationship with the United States, given the fact that, you know, there's still concern in the armed forces, in the defense establishment, in the foreign ministry of Chinese expansion into the West Philippine Sea.
Let me just go back to what you said a while ago, that to your mind, you think that China has always been suspicious of the Duterte administration. How? Can you expound more on that?
And yeah, early part, especially early part.
And have those suspicions been confirmed with this latest act? Go ahead.
Early part. You know, after President Duterte visited China and announced his separation, then when he came back, separation does not mean severing. So I noticed a lot of Chinese analysts, they're not dumb, they're not stupid. They're also familiar with our history. So they said, oh, this is an anomaly. This is something. And recently, a number of them are saying, I told you so. Probably this administration is just playing us. Remember, they have their experience with Gloria Macapagal Arroyo. They thought Gloria Macapagal Arroyo would sever the alliance after you have that crisis in 2005. Never happened.
Mm. I guess at the end of the day, one can always say that China does what China pleases.
Yeah, yes, of course. And so is the Philippines. As a middle power here, we have to play this balancing game. This is basically the game that almost all ASEAN countries play. the term used by Mao Zedong is we have to walk on two legs. Or we have a term in Filipino, right? Lumalangoy sa dalawang ilog.
Mm. All right. In the final days of this administration, how do you think this independent foreign policy, so-called independent foreign policy, should shape, should take its form in the final days of this administration, Professor De Castro?
Well, I think
your expectations.
Well, it'll be a campaign issue to criticize that it has never been a real independent foreign policy that is simply replacing one master with another. And what is really needed is an independent foreign policy that is attuned to what's happening in the region. Independent foreign policy doesn't mean that you are free to do whatever you want. It basically means taking into account the constraints, the opportunities presented to you by the international system, and making the right choice.
All right. International Studies Professor Renato De Castro, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Again, please extend my regards to your mother-in-law, my former teacher. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Okay.
All right. From there, we're going to take a break and still ahead, a closer look at the mental aspect of gunning for gold at the Tokyo Olympics. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back with the latest in business. Philippine factory activity slightly eases in July. The country's IHS market manufacturing PMI came in at 50.4, still marking an expansion, but is down from the 50.8 reading back in June. IHS Market says the strong global demand for electronics may bode well for the Philippines in the coming quarter. If manufacturing firms can work around stricter COVID-19 lockdowns.
The big question mark for the Philippines is whether the new COVID wave will create disruptions to industrial production. What we've seen in other countries around Southeast Asia, which are affected by the new COVID waves, such as South Korea, Vietnam, is that the companies themselves create in-house facilities. The other, of course, is to roll out vaccinations for these critical workers.
As for other ASEAN countries, Indonesia's factory activity took a big hit last month, slipping into a surge ripped through the country. Manufacturing activity in Thailand also contracted for a third straight month. Supermarket operators assure the public there will be enough supply of food and other essentials as Metro Manila prepares to go into a two-week lockdown. More people have been lining up at supermarkets to stock up on groceries, but a group of supermarket operators says there's no panic buying yet.
Nangyari nun, prolonged yung panic buying nun. This time, there was no, I don't perceive it as panic buying. Even the big stores, I saw them only, some of them, only opened half their counters.
Heads up, motorists, oil prices are headed higher this week. The price of gasoline will go up by a peso and 5 centavos per liter, while diesel will increase by 80 centavos. The price of kerosene also going up by 75 centavos. Shell Philippines has announced it will implement these price hikes Tuesday morning. A U.S. government ban on residential evictions expires, putting millions of Americans at risk of being forced out of their homes. The expiration was a blow to U.S. President Joe Biden, who made a last-ditch request to Congress to extend the moratorium, citing the raging Delta variant. The eviction ban has been in place since March 2020 to prevent homelessness during the pandemic. House Democrats earlier proposed to extend it until October, but a Republican lawmaker blocked that bid. According to a recent study, over 15 million people in 6.5 million U.S. households are currently behind on rental payments, collectively owing more than $20 billion to landlords. Three Filipino boxers are just a couple of jabs away from matching Haydelyn Diaz's historic golden moment at the Tokyo Olympics. Our very own Migs Bustos now joins us for more on that. Migs, tell us more about it.
Hi, Casey. Nesty Petesho will be gunning for gold in the women's featherweight division this Tuesday. Teammate Yumir Marshall is also assured of a medal, but Carlo Paalam is not far behind. What's going on in the minds of these boxers as they try to punch their way into Olympic glory? Here is my interview with their mental performance coach. So we now have an ANC coach, Marcos Manalo. He is the mental performance coach of Philippine boxing team. Thank you so much, Coach Marcos, for joining us here in ANC as we talk about the mental strength and mental conditioning of our athletes. We talk so much about the physical, right? That's what the highlights are for. But then so much are given importance and perspective on what goes on behind the scenes when it comes to the mental wellness of our athletes. Number one, Coach, I want to ask you, Haydelyn's win Monday, July 26, how has that changed, you know, in terms of inspiration for the boxers and at least for the ones that are there in Tokyo?
Yeah, the boxers, especially Yumir, was very vocal about it. That Haydelyn's victory really inspired them. It's more of the belief na, oh, kaya pala mag-goal dito. So it helped them have that perspective na it can be done, diba? It hasn't been done, obviously, for the longest time, you know, but it can be done. And sa boxing, lalo na, wala pa tayong Olympic gold medal, diba? For ever since, diba? But yun nadala ni Haydelyn, yung belief na kaya. We actually started the year, instead of asking about their New Year's resolutions, we identified their one word that is meaningful and powerful to you, one word that can guide you in terms of your mindset and approach for the rest of the year.
Coach Marcos, do you remember their one words, at least for our boxers there?
Yeah, see, Nesty, it's appreciate. And I think it helped a lot in terms of yung naging outlook niya for this year. I think yung concept ng gratitude for her to be more appreciative of what she has. Ang laking bagay eh. Iba talaga yung outlook niya eh. Carlo, ang one word niya is improvement. Which so far talagang pinapakita niya. Yeah. Yumir is it's gold.
So, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for.
It's gold, but it's not just the result per se. Mm-hmm. Pero may meaning yun for him. Eh. So, okay. Kumbaga, gold, but hindi lang siya yung tipong, okay, medal. Meron yung meaning for him. And I think it has a lot to do with the sacrifices na daanan niya sa buong boxing career niya.
Nesty Petesho's gold medal match will be held around noontime tomorrow. Meantime, Team Philippine sprinter Christina Knott has bowed out of the Olympics. Knott finished fifth in Heat 7 of the women's 200 meters with a time of 23.8 seconds. That is it from my end. Casey, back to you.
All right, Migs, you know, a lot of people really focusing on mental toughness now, which is good, especially with what happened to U.S. gymnast Simone Biles. You know, a lot of people quickly pounced on her, saying that she was a quitter. But I guess if you look at your mental well-being in the same way that you would look at your physical well-being, you're not going to play injured, right?
Right.
And that's what happened to her. She was injured mentally with the twisties, which could be dangerous for her.
Well, it's not public knowledge that all the twists, all the moves that gymnasts do are very life-threatening, especially when you go on floor exercises, especially with what Simone Biles is known for, right? And for me, it may be an unpopular decision, but she knows the effects of what may happen if she did not follow her mental well-being.
Exactly.
And one more note from Coach Marcos, what he also mentioned to me in the interview is the boxers' focus is on the now. They may be distracted, or there may be external factors about the rewards, everything that may come after. And he said that that will take care of the rest. What matters is they focus on the now, not even the results, not even the medals, but what is the task at hand. And for tomorrow, Casey, around this time tomorrow, we are going to witness history. Nessie Betesho matching Heidelin Diaz's feat in 2016 now also has the chance to go for gold. Casey?
And we're all going to be watching, and we're all going to be praying, and we're all going to be manifesting. They were short of a medal, but as we said a couple of days back, they're going for gold, and we're going to be there for them. Thanks a lot. Mix Bustos there joining us today. And that'll do it for this broadcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.